Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks for joining me today. We've got a great show for you. We've got a very interesting guest. And before we even get to him, let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The Briefing Room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
The violence in 2018 is unabated. We've already seen the deaths of four American law enforcement officers. We've seen violent encounters taking place all over this country. And some of these attacks are very frightening because they are targeting police simply for being police. A particularly upsetting example is what took place in Los Angeles with a Los Angeles County Sheriff's detective this week. This detective, who is a special investigator, special victims investigator, was in plain clothes, but apparently was readily identifiable as a law enforcement officer, was approached by an individual as he left a fast food establishment. Now, this person, this man, suspect, walked up to the deputy detective and inquired. He said, are you a police officer? And the detective answered in the affirmative that he was, whereupon this suspect drew a butcher knife and plunged it into the detective's chest and then ran away. Now, this was a completely unprovoked attack simply because this man was targeted as being a police officer. Now, this is demonstrative of the kind of risks that every single law enforcement officer is facing every single day, and they don't even have to be in uniform. So what we are seeing here is as 2018 is still in its infancy, is more and more violence. The other violent encounter I want to talk about, and this is related to the guest that is going to be on in the interview room. And there was a deputy. Now, this deputy was the oldest serving deputy in San Bernardino. He was 70 years old and served for 36 years. He was off duty, and he was driving down a highway when some animals ran in front of his car, and he swerved to avoid them. And when he did so and he braked, a car hit him from behind, a very slight fender bender. Well, it turned out that the guy that was in the other car was a known gang member. The subject got out of his car and confronted the deputy, and the deputy identified himself. As soon as he did that, this punk punched him right in the head, knocking him to the ground where the back of his head hit the pavement, and it killed him. The subject then tried to run away. He actually did, but a good citizen saw what happened and rammed his truck into the suspect's truck, trying to keep him from escaping. Now, he got away for a short period of time, but was arrested shortly thereafter. The violence that people are willing to do against a law enforcement officer is startling, especially over something as innocuous as a fender bender. But you're going to get some really good insight about the causation of that in California when you hear the guest that I have on the show. It's going to startle you, but this is once more another prime example of how law enforcement officers are facing more and more danger every single day. There was a murder of a law enforcement officer And it occurred in Douglas County, Colorado. And Deputy Zach Parrish was murdered on New Year's Eve. He was shot to death. And four other officers were shot at the same time. What happened was they were responding to a disturbance call. And it turned out that the suspect was mentally challenged, shall we say. The deputies and the police officer who was there decided that they needed to bring him in for an evaluation because of his mental issues. Well, when they tried to talk him out of the room that he was in, which had the door closed and locked, this suspect opened fire with a semi-automatic rifle and released a lethal barrage, hitting five of those law enforcement officers, killing Deputy Zach Parrish. Now, he was eventually taken out. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because this is, first of all, this is the way the new year started. This is a terrible way to begin 2018. But the sheriff of Douglas County, Tony Spurlock, did something that was unusual. And that is, within about a week, he created a video about this shooting. And he used a lot of the body cam footage. And then he narrated it. And I think, and then he released it publicly. And it's received millions of views. I think that what he did was the right thing to do. Because what the sheriff did in this case was demonstrate to the American public exactly what the dangers are. Now, these officers were doing nothing more than trying to aid a man who was in emotional distress. And that cost them the one deputy his life and the others being shot. You see, every single encounter that the law enforcement officer makes can be a deadly encounter. And this is one of those issues that is rarely understood by the American public. They see the propaganda that's been put out by many of the media outlets and also by people with political agendas, and they sometimes buy into it. That's why it's so important that law enforcement becomes proactive in trying to get the true narrative out there about the dangers and about why law enforcement acts as they do. And so I know that the sheriff in this case received some criticism for releasing this video, but I, for one, believe that if this was done more frequently, I think that the American public would back their law enforcement officers and give them a much better understanding of the dangers that face these men and women every single day. So the deputy Zach Parrish was a well-loved figure in their community, and he gave his life in the line of duty. Now, as you know, I pay my respects to law enforcement officers who die in the line of duty each week at the end of this show, at the end of this program. And this week is no different. I read three names. But I want to talk about one in particular because some information came out today that is very disturbing. One of the officers whose name I read, his name is Chris Bodwin, and he was from Monroe, Louisiana. He's a young officer. He's only served since 2016, I think 17 months. And the initial report was that he died in a single vehicle car accident when his vehicle left the roadway, struck a tree. But some information came out today, and that is that It appears that the officer shot himself while he was driving down the road. Now, law enforcement suicide is a subject that I speak about frequently. I talk about post-traumatic stress, and I talk about police suicide. It is not a topic that is comfortable to talk about. And when you have a situation that appears to be another suicide in a dramatic way like this, where a young officer shoots himself as he's driving down the highway, it's so demonstrative of mental health issues affecting law enforcement officers. I have no idea what the causation was. I have no idea what was going through this officer's mind. Was he depressed because of personal issues? Did he suffer from post-traumatic stress, even from his short tenure as a law enforcement officer? I don't know that. But what I do know is that law enforcement suicide is an increasingly powerful issue in the law enforcement community. And it's not always addressed in a forthright fashion. It is unfortunate that many of the law enforcement suicides are reported as something else, accidental overdoses or accidental deaths. And there is no serious tracking method that is in place. And until we as a profession realize that this is an issue that needs to be addressed seriously, we're going to continue to see these tragic occurrences take place. And there are so many avenues now that are available to law enforcement to receive treatment for post-traumatic stress. In upcoming shows, I'm going to be talking about this in more and more detail. I have some really interesting guests coming on to the program in the next few weeks that have struggled and have succeeded to overcome the perils of post-traumatic stress to live healthy, happy lives. So this is a subject that I take very seriously. I know it's not the most pleasant topic to talk about, but for the American law enforcement officer and for those who support the American law enforcement officer, which I know are many of you, it's a topic that I think we really need to talk about and be honest about. So that's my subject there. I want to talk about a few other things. Leadership. Law enforcement leadership, you know, I talk about it all the time. I'm really disappointed by much of the leadership in this country of small departments and big departments. Something just happened that came to the public's attention just in the last couple of days, and that is in San Antonio, Texas. I'll read the first headline. The San Antonio Police Officers Association asked city officials to place San Antonio Police Chief William McManus on administrative leave on Monday and requested the state or federal officials investigate the chief's decision to release 12 alleged illegal immigrants in December. So here's what happened. Now, this is just coming to light. The fact that the Police Officers Association brought this incident to light reveals something a lot deeper as far as what's going on in the San Antonio Police Department. So the incident occurred on December 23rd. Police received a call from a woman who saw people getting out of the back of a tractor trailer and that there was people in distress. Police said that they apprehended a guy who admitted he smuggled the group from a Laredo warehouse, and he was supposed to take them to another location. So he was charged. He was arrested. Now, the illegal aliens who were being smuggled in That's ICE territory. That's where immigration should have been called. But the police chief decided not to. The one was a juvenile. One was from Guatemala. They were offered medical assistance. And an officer at the scene contacted Homeland Security, and agents were sent to the scene. But when they arrived, they were told that Chief McManus had ordered the case to be handled at a state level and that he had already released everyone so that they don't even have a prosecutable case against the smuggler, because the chief interfered and he violated his oath. Now, you would think that after being basically caught red-handed, the chief would have handled this in such a way where he would have been sorry for his actions. But not this guy. Not this guy. He's not holding back. He believes he did the right thing. And, you know, this is part of this leadership issue we're having all over the country. We're seeing police chiefs let politics dictate the way that they enforce the laws. Now, I guarantee you, if that decision had been made by a patrol sergeant or a street level supervisor, that guy would be looking for a new job today. Now, and I personally believe that the San Antonio Police Officers Association did the right thing by bringing this to the attention of the city. This chief needs to be held accountable. Now, I've read other things about this guy, and it doesn't surprise me from the things that I have heard about his leadership capabilities. But this is a serious issue, and it's not one that should be ignored. So, you know, you hear something like this, and you got to tell yourself once again that policing and politics really don't mix, and yet they are so part and parcel of one another that they seem inextricable. I'm a great believer that politics needs to be diminished in law enforcement, both at the level of administrative politics, and also within the agency itself. Many of the law enforcement agencies are being, in essence, a puppet of elected officials, and many of these elected officials are no more qualified to be talking, making law enforcement decisions than the city sanitation engineer who's riding the truck. But still, it seems to be because they are elected officials, they're given a great deal of power. Politics and policing, they're a volatile mix. And I tell you who winds up getting hurt. It's the working cop, and it's those citizens who they have vowed to serve and protect who pay the price for that type of politics. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. I want to say thanks to the folks over at Nevada Safes. Jim Dillon, a former retired Metro captain at 5250 West Charleston in Las Vegas. Telephone number 702-331-SAFE. And they have the largest selection of security safes. If you own a gun, you need a safe. Contact the folks, Nevada Safes. They literally have the largest selection of safes in the Western United States. So check them out. That's NevadaSafe.com. I want to thank you, the listener, for making this such a successful year for Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutLoud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Very excited to have as a guest on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, the district attorney from San Bernardino, California, District Attorney Michael Ramos. And he has been the district attorney there for four terms. He must be doing something right. But we're going to talk to him about this latest murder of a law enforcement officer, the murder of Deputy Sheriff, San Bernardino Deputy Sheriff Larry Falsey, just several days ago. Mr. Ramos, thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Well, thank you, and thank you for doing what you do. That law enforcement needs a voice out there, and that's a great organization that you have.
I really do appreciate that. So, you know, I reached out to you, Mr. Ramos, because rarely do I see an elected official that's got the guts to say what you came out and said about the failure of the criminal justice system in California as it related to this brutal murder of a 70-year-old deputy sheriff, Larry Falsey, on January 2nd. And this tragic killing brings to light a lot of those difficulties that are facing the American law enforcement officer, but especially in California.
Yeah, and especially in California. I also serve as chairman of the board for the National District Attorneys Association. It's an issue across America. You know, everybody cries about the defendant's rights, defendant's rights. Okay, that's great. We have a great constitution. They have rights. But then you cross the line, and then when you start pushing the very liberal public safety agenda, and in California, we lead the nation in that matter, and you start releasing these violent criminals, gang members, out of state prison because you need to make room, it's absolutely ridiculous. Then you add the fact that our law enforcement officers that are protecting us daily, they're being assaulted on a daily basis. We had a 500% increase in our county, in our county jail, on our deputy sheriffs in the last 2 years because of this liberal agenda that they have. And I'm frankly sick of it.
Wait a minute, a 500% increase in what?
Yes, in assaults on our deputies in the jail in the last 2 years because they're releasing these people that used to be in prison. So now we can only put them in our local jails unless it's a very serious or violent felony, according to our governor. And these people that used to be in prison, they have nothing to lose. So they're assaulting our peace officers. They're threatening them, which made me about 3 years ago, I created a crimes against peace officer unit and said, we're not going to put up with this crap anymore, and we're going to hold them responsible. Then you have this deputy, 70 years old, dedicated his career, his life, served in the military, then as a deputy sheriff, doing patrol, and he gets in a little fender bender like any of us, and this gang member, career criminal, punches him, knocks him to the ground, and kills him. This guy that killed him, if you want to call him a human being, should have been in state prison, but the liberal justices reversed a gang enhancement, and he was out on the streets. And we got to put a stop to this. Absolutely, have to put a stop to this.
When I read about this death and this suspect, this punk Alonzo Smith, who should never have been on the street, as you right. you know, so angrily put out to the media, and I was really glad that you brought this subject to light, because we have been seeing, you know, following the Obama years, when he was so bent on releasing as many people as possible, but your state and your Governor Moonbeam over there just jumped on the bandwagon in a major way.
It was huge. It was a major way, and I've been fighting this and through different forms. And you know, our legislators are so liberal, we can't get anything done. So I finally said, enough about being politically correct. I'm going to say how I feel. We're going to push some legislation and some initiatives in California, supported by district attorneys and law enforcement, and take back the state, take back our streets. We're losing it to these gang members. And I think the public finally realizes, hey, this isn't working. I mean, it's just not. Our crime rates are starting to go through the roof.
Well, that's one of the things that needs to be addressed in public, because I look at and see what some of the things that your voters approve, and I have to shake my head. Basically, decriminalizing everything.
Just about everything. It's ridiculous. And then having a different law interpretations, like this Smith guy. You know, he admitted he was selling drugs. He had a weapon. He tossed it. He's running from the cops. They arrest him. He gets convicted. He gets 12 years in state prison. And our liberal Supreme Court reverses it, saying that, well, under the new law of Rodriguez, there has to be at least two gang members in the car to call him a gang. Are you kidding me? The guy admitted he was a gang member. So he gets out of prison. And because of that decision, we have a wonderful man that lost his life. And it's sickening. And we have got to do something about it. I'll tell you, the other side, last year I had the opportunity to meet with our United States Attorney General Sessions. And I'll tell you, it was a different feeling leaving his office. That he gets it. We need to get these criminals, cartel people off the streets. You know, this whole liberal agenda from Obama and Eric Holder has really hurt us, but more importantly, hurts law enforcement. Every day.
You know, one of the statistics, you know, we had a good year statistically, I'm saying, in the murders of law enforcement officers last year in 2017. We saw a pretty good diminishment. But the reality is that the shootings of police officers was way higher than the previous year.
Yeah.
So it's really only luck. And maybe you know, the additional use of ballistic vests and protective equipment that kept that death rate low. But if you look at the assaults on law enforcement officers, I mean, what you just told me about a 500% increase is absolutely shocking.
It's very shocking, and it's happening. It's happening across our state. It's happening across the country. And thank God that these people, these criminals, are missing with their weapons and they're shooting at officers, and we need to hold them responsible. Last year, I was co-chair of a death penalty reform initiative to save the death penalty in the state of California, and what got these voters in California to pass it was to I reminded them that these people on death row, there's 53 cop killers on death row, and they kill these men and women who have families and don't ever forget that. And you know, if we get rid of the death penalty, that's going to be a big problem too. So that's another fight that I'm going to keep fighting as the district attorney of San Bernardino County. And on the national level, we need to make sure that these people that take the lives of peace officer, we take their lives.
I couldn't agree more. But I mean, when was the last time that somebody was actually executed in California?
Yeah, it was back in early 80s of some year. Yeah. So it's a constant battle, but we can't give up. The minute we give up, then the gangbangers and everybody else and the criminals take over. But, you know, I like I said before, I truly appreciate your organization, because there really isn't a voice out there for peace officers. I went after the old John Stewart. If you can go look at an old video that, you know, he was talking about officers and officer involved shootings, and he lied about one of our deputy sheriffs out here in California. And I went after him, and he had to apologize to me nationally because he wasn't, you know, giving us the truth, the facts. It's so easy for the media to play up and, you know, talk about all of the negative aspects of what they consider, you know, and without even doing their homework. So we got to stay on top of this, and that's my goal.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you've been in this game a long, long time. I mean, yes. 15 years. That's an amazing record, track record for an elected official. Have you had personal interaction with your governor in relation to law enforcement issues?
Yes. Yes. I happen to be the president of our state organization when he passed one of the liberal get out of jail free cards. And I've talked to Jerry Brown. I've talked to him face to face. These people that you're releasing from prison are not the people you think they are, Governor. And he called me 2 years ago on a Saturday on this cell phone and said, "We got a problem, Mike." I go, "What's that?" He said, "You're putting too many people in state prison." I said, "Governor, I can only put the people in state prison." Yeah, I wish I would have had a recording. I go, "I'm just putting people in prison that are gang members and that are using guns and that are violent felons because I can't put the others in prison anymore." Because you're like, "Well, we got to fix this, Mike." I go, "Well, here's how we fix it. We hold the worst of the worst responsible. You can't just open the prison doors." But so, yeah, I've had numerous conversations with the governor. We agree to disagree.
Well, it seems like you must. Yeah, I guess you're talking to a stone there, because instead of enacting anything that actually would protect the people, I mean, that's what's so mind-boggling to me, Mr. Ramos, is that these political these politicians that get elected, their number one goal should be to protect the citizens that they serve, and yet it seems that they have these weird political agendas that do just the opposite. Can you shed some light on what the thinking is to want to release violent criminals?
Yeah. You know, and I don't get it either. You know, government, their number one priority should be public safety. I mean, and then I understand prison overcrowding. So guess what? Let's build another one. You're going to spend tons of money on welfare and all these other programs on these folks. Let's use one-time funds and let's build something. And if you think there's no rehabilitation going on, well, then let's get some people in there that know what they're doing. The opening the gate to allow prisoners to be released early, and it's getting worse. They're talking about now in California getting rid of the murder felony rule. You know, that you murder somebody in the course of a felony, well, that's not going to be an enhancement anymore.
Are you kidding?
So here's another fight that I'm going to have to fight. No, it's coming down the pike. In fact, there's an organization that's you're going to start hearing more and more about that nationally. So that's why your organization is so important. We are going to fight it. We, and I mean San Bernardino County and the National District Attorneys Association. We are the voice of prosecutors, and one of my highest priority is protecting our peace officers, and we have to do it because we've got too many people that are getting elected that are very liberal, and they think that they're going to be able to turn people's lives around, everybody's lives around. But you and I both know, by the time somebody gets to prison, they've had numerous opportunities on probation, counseling, etc. It's going to be a constant battle. But I'm willing to fight it.
Well, you know, one of the things that surprises me is how are the voters of California so gullible that they can have propositions rammed down their throat that they vote for, which in essence allows criminals to victimize them more frequently and with less consequences. And of course, I'm referring to some of the basic decriminalization of drug crimes and even burglary.
Yeah, Prop 47 in California was horrible. The initiative was called Safe Neighborhoods and Safe Schools Act, which was totally false. But they pulled the wool over the voters' eyes. And They had a couple of millionaires that put millions of dollars. They ran commercials, and we were fighting. It was like David Goliath. We hardly had any money to try and educate the public. You're going to create more crime because you're going to take away burglary, auto theft, drug cases, possession of heroin, cocaine. They're all going to be misdemeanors now. And guess what? Our drug courts that were doing pretty good, these defendants, they said, hey, we don't have to go to drug court. We're going to slap on the wrist. It's a misdemeanor. We don't care. And now the public's realizing our thefts are going up like crazy. Car burglaries, you know, it's the crime rate is increasing, all the theft and property crimes. And now they're jumping up and down like, oh, no, what did we do? Well, what you did was you didn't read the facts, and you now we're now having to pay for it. So it's a huge problem. And I'll tell you what, we were shocked and surprised that we actually won the death penalty reform, because the opposition, they had movie stars and everybody else. They spent millions of dollars to get rid of the death penalty in the state of California. But we were blessed with our law enforcement partners. We were able to raise about $5 to $6 million to get the word out that, no, here are the people that are on death row, and here's what they've done. Tortured children, killed our peace officers in the line of duty, kidnapped, multiple murders. So it's an ongoing fight in the state of California, and believe me, the Innocent Project, the ACLU, everybody watches California.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I don't know how much interaction you actually have with street cops, but I can tell you that I get bombarded with mm-hmm. frustrated messages of frustration from guys who can't wait to get the hell out of the job anymore because of the frustration of simply not being able to do what they put the badge on for. And that also leads to additional issues like post-traumatic stress. I mean, it's all rolled up in a ball of wax. Do you get the opportunity to talk to street cops?
I do. I have some very good friends that are street cops, very good friends I graduated from high school with that are street cops, and they're frustrated. And I will tell you this right now, and I've been saying it to people for years, being a peace officer is one of the toughest jobs in the world right now. And because you're risking your life every day, you're second guessing yourself. And the minute you start to second guess, you lose seconds. It could put you in harm's way. And they're frustrated. They're constantly having to, you know, watch their back so they don't get sued by all of these sue happy, you know, defendants, attorneys, et cetera. It is a tough, tough job. And, you know, when you sit down and talk to these peace officers that decide to do this profession, I mean, they have a passion. They want to protect all the citizens. They want to protect us. They want to protect their families. They love their work, but it's getting so complicated now, especially in the state of California, that you're right. A lot of them are retiring early or leaving to go to other careers. And to me, that's a huge problem, because we have some of the best peace officers that I am aware of and I know and I have met, had the honor to call my friends, and we need to do a better job of not only assisting them with the laws of the state of California, but that's why I created the Crimes Against Peace Officer Unit, because we had a Deputy McKay who was murdered in our mountains by an ex-cop, actually.
I remember that incident, sure.
Yeah, and an officer that was shot, and the deputy survived, and I said, you know, we created a Crimes Against Peace Officer Unit with vertical prosecutors. The minute it comes in, including misdemeanors, you're not going to spit on a cop in San Bernardino County, or I'm going to take you to court. I said that enough already.
Now, that's really interesting. I am unaware of any other district attorney that has a Crimes Against Peace Officers Unit. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so we went looking for a model. There was a model in Miami, Dade County in Miami, Florida. We kind of looked at that model. I know Los Angeles County has a Crimes Against Peace Officer Unit, but I'm not sure they do misdemeanors. They have so many. So we took a look at that, and we put one together. I have senior lawyers assigned to it. And not only do they handle the felonies, any misdemeanor or any crime against a peace officer is handled by a deputy DA without being bounced around to a pretrial lawyer, an issuing lawyer, a preliminary lawyer, no. And they have all the rights of any other victims, and they will be called and contacted before any plea bargain happens. So we have the officer statement, the victim, they are the victim, and we, in the first year alone, listen to this, this shocked me. There were 2,300 victims that were peace officers in San Bernardino County in 2013. 2,300. Wow. Now, 600 were felonies. The rest were misdemeanors. But I said, I don't care. If they spit on them just because you put a badge on, you didn't call for that in your profession for abuse. Even if they threaten their families, we file on them. We're aggressive. And so I actually talked to Attorney General Sessions about that and sent him our protocol, because he said we got to do a better job on the federal level. So the federal level is taking a look at our program too, and I want to push this across America.
I think that's a fantastic program. Now I would imagine that when you rolled that out, that was a real shot in the arm for morale for the police officers that serve in your county. What's the feedback been for that?
Yeah, I went back a year later to the association, the Sheriff's Employees Association, in the board meeting, and one of the board members raised his hand, a deputy sheriff, and said, you know, this works. I got assaulted. I hurt my shoulder. Your lawyers were all over it. Every step of the way in court. I got some restitution, and before the guy was sent to prison, they asked me regarding the plea bargain, do you want to go to trial? And he goes, I never used to get communication like that. So it's working. So they know they have a place. They have somebody protecting them and watching over them. And I'll tell you, the defense bar didn't like it. They thought, oh,
I'll bet they didn't.
Yes, here's the DA wanting to be buddy-buddy with the cops. No, here's the DA that's protecting our peace officers in the line of duty, and you attempt, any of your clients attempt to do something to them, we're going to go after them. And I have my top lawyers in it, and my lawyers love it. They want to be in that unit.
What have you had feedback as far as do the offenders on the street, do they know that this is the new way that things are being handled? Has that word started to circulate?
Oh yeah, Chris, they sure do. They know, don't mess around in San Bernardino County. This DA is not only going to come after you, and if it's a strike, he's going to get a double strike and a third strike. There was a probation report where one of these crooks said, when I get out of prison, I'm moving the hell out of San Bernardino County. Well, instead of saying, when I get out of prison, I'm going to change my life.
Yeah. Crime,
no, he's going to move somewhere else where he thinks he can get away with it.
That's now there's a con thinking, all right.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Well, you know, when you're looking at the effectiveness and you gauge it as an initiative, you can look at the numbers, but what really matters is, did it make a significant difference in the ways that law enforcement is being affected? And it sounds like that this has been a very effective tool in your prosecutor's office.
It has been. It has been for us. It has been for our law enforcement officers. It has been for the morale of the officers. You know, this day and age, they're always being attacked about this bad shooting or this or that. And no, we are now, not only protecting them and doing justice for them, but we are highlighting just how dangerous the job is. And we're going to continue to do that. And look, the bottom line, the end of the day, everybody wants their family to be safe. And that's not going to happen unless our peace officers feel that they have somebody supporting them when they're doing their job every day. And that's my goal. And that will continue to be my goal as long as I'm district attorney.
Let me ask you this. We know on the state level that you're fighting an uphill battle, that Governor Brown has a very liberal agenda, and so do many of the state legislators. You have your kingdom, that is San Bernardino, where at least you have the ability to to affect the lives of the people there. How about your elected officials? Are you getting cooperation from them, from those elected in San Bernardino?
Yes, I am. Not only our local elected board of supervisors who have given me the resources to really implement some of these programs, I'm getting support from our Congress folks, our federal folks, and some of our local legislators. So they understand, they get it. So I'm very fortunate as far as that goes. Now, as far as the rest of the state of California, it's a very blue liberal state. And that makes it tough. We can't pass any legislation that has anything to do with making public safety a priority or making it stronger. It's a constant, frustrating battle. But that doesn't mean we're going to give up. We're going to continue to push. And, you know, we see it across the country, too, across America. And all my colleagues, you know, all the elected DAs, we're on the same page. And we have to keep up the good fight.
You know, let me, talking about district attorneys, I want to address one national issue here, and that is the recent election of a strongly anti-law enforcement district attorney in Philadelphia. Yeah. Now, Philadelphia, of course, has a terrible, terrible crime problem, and the people elected a guy who literally just he's only been in office, 8 days? And he's already done a bloodletting of experienced prosecutors. How do you react to that?
Well, you know, we're not happy about that. We really think that the very liberal folks of the world wanted that to happen so they can go in there and change the whole dynamics of justice and public safety, and they're trying to do that across America. They pick certain DAs and they go after them, and it's again being funded by multimillionaires to take these people out and put in the people that they select, whether they were defense attorneys. I got a deputy public defender defense attorney running against me this term, and he's hoping to get some of those resources and money too, so he could take over and, you know, do the what I call the hug-a-thug therapy.
Yeah, right.
You know, instead of holding people responsible, they're going to turn it into, you might as well call it a second public defender's office. It's ridiculous.
You know, and I think we're talking, you know, this is the George Soros syndrome that we're
Absolutely.
Talking about, who has been playing a very significant role in basically trying to put in liberal sheriffs and also district attorneys, and he's been pretty damn effective at it too, which is really frightening.
Yeah, it is, and I have colleagues where he's gone after them, and you know, you look at the numbers in this Philadelphia race, and there, that right there, it'll tell you that big chunk of money that came from Soros.
You know, well, I mean, I'm happy to see that. I mean, I can imagine your frustration. You've been in the game a long, long time, and you have seen the significant changes that have taken place over the last decade or so, especially under the Obama administration, which continues to haunt us. So I am heartened by your resolve and your dedication to protecting the people of San Bernardino. And you're really going after this Alonzo Smith who attacked this Deputy Falsey. I saw that there was tremendous charges on this, and you're going after it very aggressively.
We are. We're going after him for murder. And I told my staff, I want my best lawyers on it, got my lead gang attorney on it. This person that killed our deputy, a good man, doesn't deserve to see the light of day. He needs to be in prison for the rest of his life, and we're going to keep pushing and fighting and add gang enhancements, and we'll fight all the way to the California Supreme Court. I am sick and tired of these career criminals creating havoc, and of course the worst situation, harming our peace officers, and in this situation murdering a wonderful man.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you're not giving up this fight. I want to thank you so much for for appearing on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. And I offer you an open invitation anytime that you want to address the people of this nation through this forum. I'd be proud to have you back.
Well, thank you, and God bless you for what you do. We need more people like you, and whatever I can do to help you, you let me know. Thank you.
Now, this is a district attorney of the County of San Bernardino, Michael Ramos, 15 years serving in that capacity, and we've been talking about the murder of Deputy Larry Falsey and all things related to law enforcement in California and San Bernardino. Once again, thank you so much, Mr. Ramos. Danger!
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to those men and women of the profession who have given their lives in the line of duty. This week, unfortunately, I have three names to read. 2018 has already proven deadly for the American law enforcement officer, with four line of duty deaths, and we are just in the first week or so. The first officer, Lieutenant Christopher Robitaux. Lieutenant Christopher Robitaux was struck and killed by a vehicle while checking on the welfare of another driver who had been involved in an accident on the New Jersey Turnpike near Exit 14. Lieutenant Robitaux, who was in uniform on his way to work shortly after 6:30 a.m., had exited his vehicle and was walking towards the accident scene when another vehicle fatally struck him. Lieutenant Robitaux had served with the Jersey City Police Department for 23 years and was assigned to the East District. He is survived by his wife and three children. Lieutenant Christopher Robitaux of the Jersey City Police Department, end of watch, January 5th, 2018. The second officer was Chris Beaudoin. Officer Chris Beaudoin was killed in a single vehicle crash at the intersection of South 2nd Street and Winsboro Road at approximately 3 a.m. His patrol car left the roadway and struck a tree, causing him to suffer fatal injuries. Officer Beaudoin had served with the Monroe, Louisiana Police Department for 17 months. He survived by his wife, two children, and parents. Officer Chris Beaudoin, Monroe, Louisiana Police Department, end of watch, January 7th, 2018. Deputy Sheriff Daniel McCartney of the Pierce County Sheriff's Department was shot and killed after responding to a burglary in progress near 45th Avenue Court East and 200th Street East in Frederickson at approximately 11:30 a.m. Deputy McCartney was the first officer on the scene and became engaged in a foot pursuit of at least one suject. The man opened fire on Deputy McCartney during the foot pursuit, mortally wounding him. He was transported to St. Joseph Medical Center, where he passed away at approximately 2 a.m. One subject was found dead at the scene, apparently shot during the gunfight by Deputy McCartney. A second subject was arrested the following day after a massive manhunt. Deputy McCartney was a U.S. Navy veteran. He'd served with the Pierce County Sheriff's Department for 3 years and had previously served with the Hoquiam Police Department for 6 years. He is survived by his wife and three sons. Deputy Daniel McCartney of the Pierce County Sheriff's Department, end of watch, January 8th, 2018. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for tuning in again this week to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. We are heard on Live Talk Radio and, of course, on iTunes and Stitcher. Here's my social media, because I love to hear from you guys. If you're on Facebook, go to Randy Sutton Public Figure and like it and follow it, and you and I can communicate over there. I get a lot of messages from listeners. I love to interact. And if you have a topic that you would like me to bring up on Blue Lives Radio, I'll be happy to do that. Just let me know what it is on Facebook. Also, I'm on Twitter, LT Randy Sutton. That's LT Randy Sutton on Twitter. I'm not on any of the other platforms yet, but I will be. However, I am on LinkedIn. You can look me up on LinkedIn. So hit me up on social media. I love to hear from you guys. Also, if you would, check out my books. I have a number of books, Cop's Life. I am also about to release in a new format, The Power of Legacy. It's scheduled for a spring release. I'm really excited about that. But check out my books on Amazon. Just punch in my name or go to A Cop's Life or True Blue Police Stories. And I really appreciate you listening to Blue Lives Radio. Your support is really important to me. And I'll see you again. Well, you'll hear me again next week.